The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
It's time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson. Anyway, glad you are here. Both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors. We, with people like yourself during the week, we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And it is Memorial Day weekend. We are live and in the studio as we talk about financial matters on this Memorial Day weekend. Anyway, it's always good to be here. And, you know, this program, we will talk a little bit about what's happening in the world of finance, with the economy, what impacts that might have you. We'll talk some about maybe changes that happen in financial services and how that might impact you. And, of course, we take your calls, answer your questions regarding
financial matters. Anything financial.
Anything, hopefully financial.
Yeah, mostly financial.
Yes.
Taxes,
but it actually,
insurance, investments, 401ks, IRAs.
It's really about the financial issues that you're addressing and how that fits in with your overall life.
Yes, because for most people, their finances and their standard of living are directly connected.
Last weekend, a friend of mine says, Scott, he says, can I get your opinion on something? He's retirement age, but not retired. He's done well for himself financially. He says, my house is worth, it was a couple million dollars, and I owe like $400,000 on it. He says, my wife and I are discussing whether we should pay it off. What do you think? I said, well, what do you think? And he said, well, I don't care one way or the other because it's a low interest rate, but my wife really wants to pay it off.
Probably pay it off.
And I said, well, I would do what my wife wanted to do. That's just me. I mean, his overall, the overall scheme of things for him, it really didn't make much difference. And it's one of those things that's like, well, you can sit and debate with your spouse all the time. I could have made a financial argument to state, look, by the time you both die, you'll be better off if you have this mortgage. Mm-hmm. But it really wasn't. It really was not about the financial issues. It was about other issues, and so that's kind of what I mean by about them. So anyway, if you'd like to join the program, if you got a question for us, would like to run something by us, a second opinion on something, our contact number to join the program 1-888-2-Hanson, 1-888-2-HANSON. Again, 1-888-2-Hanson, or you can also dial 916-921-1530.
And what's the numbers for 2-Hanson? I wrote that down.
This is for people like driving to remember so that they can just put it in there.
242-6766. What do you mean, like put it in, like on the speed dial? They're going to put our show on the speed dial?
No, they just dial the number as you're driving along and you dial the number.
Got it. 888.
I'm just thinking the reason, Pat,
242,
hold on a second.
6-7-6-6.
We can have this discussion off the program, but I think the reason we have a phone number that is a word or a name is so it'd be easy to remember.
So, whoa.
If they want the number, they could dial 916-921-1530. So those are the options to be part of the program. And
yes. So my daughter graduated from high school this week.
Did you have the ceremony and all that?
Yeah, the whole bit.
All right.
So we
talk about other stuff besides just finance?
I picked her up early this morning at her school. She graduated Thursday night. She got on a bus at midnight with her and hundreds of other people.
She's in Cabo. Multiple...
Oh, holy smokes, no.
Send your daughter up to Cabo.
No.
Fort Lauderdale.
Disneyland. They took a bus all night long to Disneyland, got there at 7 in the morning, stayed all day, left at midnight, got back on the bus, and came home.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So I picked her up at 7:15 this morning, and I said, how was it? And she said, don't talk to me.
Why?
I think she was tired.
Don't talk to me. Thanks, babe. Appreciate that, honey.
It's only been 18 years of hard work.
Get you through high school and you get the don't talk to me.
Don't talk
that's
to
nice.
Me.
That's nice. I appreciate that. My my daughter's home for the summer from college.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I think it'd be nice. We'll see. It's been 24 hours.
It could change it any moment.
You never know. Anyway, let's take some calls here. 888-2-Hanson to be part of the program. Let's talk to Roger. Roger, you're with Hans McLean.
Hello.
Hi, Roger.
I was just wondering, this new rule about an employer being responsible for excess fees on a 401k, I got a couple questions. Do you think this will put a damper on employers offering it? And also, what are excess fees? 1%, 1.5%, 2%?
These are such great questions.
Yeah, very timely. And here's the issue. So it's actually not a new ruling. There was a Supreme Court ruling that came out against the case against Edison International, the power company, that apparently they neglected to have the lowest cost fund option in one of their 401k, and the Supreme Court ruled on it earlier this week, sent it back to a lower court.
And it wasn't, they had tried to say, we weren't responsible because we actually made the decision prior to the new rules, but they left the funds in the portfolio. So the Supreme Court came back and said, hey, you need to constantly monitor this.
Here's what's happening in the 401k world right now. First of all, if we kind of step back, the 401k was not really, there was no committee or task force, or Congress didn't even set out to create the retirement plan known as the 401k. There was a bill that was put into law back in the 70s. After the fact, someone said, hey, look at, I think this tax law, we can create this employer-sponsored retirement plan that's tax-deferred. That's how 401ks came about. And Department of Labor has been the ones that kind of been overseeing the 401k, because they oversee companies, make sure companies treat their employees fair and all that sort of stuff. So with the 401k, what we've seen happen, what's really happened over the last number of years, for a while, 401k providers started increasing the number of options they had available to their employees. So employees went from having five options. Sometimes they'd have a plan with 100 different options. Employers are like, look, we don't want the responsibility of you making bad choices, so we're just going to give you a ton of choices. Well, then the Department of Labor said, no. You have some responsibility to your employees. You have to help. So then we started seeing these age-based
target maturity, which is you pick a time, 2020, when you expect to retire, and then the portfolio is built based on,
but now the
age.
Department of Labor said, we don't know if that's really going to satisfy your requirement. You've got a fiduciary responsibility to your employees. Right now there's a new proposal in the Department of Labor is trying to push through, that there's a lot of backlash from many of the Wall Street firms, that says that if someone's going to offer products to go inside of 401ks, like mutual funds, they have to act in a fiduciary capacity, which means that they may not be able to accept any commissions or any backroom deals that a lot of these firms have been doing.
It goes further than that, which is the Department of Labor says if you have an IRA that started in a 401k and was rolled to an IRA, you have the same responsibility as an advisor.
So, you know, there's a lot of things still in flux on what may or may not happen.
I don't think any of it's bad, though.
No. It's all going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think it's good for you. Roger, there's only good that will happen with the consumer because of this.
If I'm an employer, this may be too complicated.
Oh, as an employer.
It's not that good.
It's not good at all.
I may not want to offer it.
How many employees do you have?
I got five.
And what is the average income of the employee?
It varies, but it's about between $50,000 and $60,000 a year.
Yeah. See, the challenge you have, Roger, as an employer, you have five employees to set. See, it's becoming more costly for the employer. In the past, a lot of times, a small business, what they would do is go buy a 401k from maybe an insurance company that would bundle all the costs set aside and all the costs that it would take to run the 401k and pass it on to all the participants. So if you're an employee, you would have a fund that would have higher expenses to pay for all the costs. I would highly recommend not having any plan like that in this day and age. You could really get in some trouble.
But what you have to ask yourself is helping attract or retain employees?
And if it's perceived by some employee down the road that my expenses are...
That is correct.
Then you need low cost. So what happens, for example, we have a 401k division. We're not here to promote our division. But we have a 401k division where we act as a fiduciary. Where we take on that responsibility for an employer. But it's really about stripping out the cost of the investment from the cost of running the 401k. You as an employer need to bear the cost of running that 401k and make sure your employees have low cost options.
Yeah. And if you don't want the liability, then you terminate the plan. You're not required to offer the 401k.
Right.
The thing that you've got to keep in mind as an employer is if it's not attracting or helping retain employees, why do you have it?
And that's the thing I think you need to take a look at, really, because that's where it'll be interesting to see what happens, because there's going to be other people in your situation that are going to start questioning,
is it worth the liability?
Yeah. Is this going to be worth it to me? Hey, we got to take a quick break, Roger. I would talk to someone who specializes in the 401k space. This is Hanson McLean. We'll be right back.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean have been airing Hanson McLean's Money Matters for nearly 20 years. The straightforward, common sense advice you hear each weekend is the same sort of advice you'll receive when you work with their advisory firm, Hanson McLean. Hanson McLean Advisors is a distinctive investment advisory firm in that it specializes with people preparing for and transitioning into retirement. The current economic environment has made it more difficult for many people to become retirement ready. Furthermore, with people living healthier, longer lives today, many folks view retirement much differently than their parents did. They want to stay active and engaged, and some don't want to ever fully retire. Hanson McLean understands that every individual is unique, and that is why they tailor their financial advice to the specific needs of each client they serve. Hanson McLean's credentialed advisors take the time to listen to their clients before they make any recommendations. And Hanson McLean's independent fiduciary model can give you confidence knowing your retirement dollars are invested properly for you. To get your retirement on track, contact them today by calling 1-888-2-HANSON or visiting them at moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters on this Memorial Weekend. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Yeah, anyway, we were talking about the 401k business, and
if we were sitting down having lunch together, I could make an argument either direction as to continue the plan or to
here's the thing.
Stop it.
Here's what's bizarre, and we'll go back to some calls here in a moment, but our retirement, when you think about this, you want to set money aside for retirement, right? Every financial advisor tells you to contribute to your 401k. Everywhere you read, it just makes sense, whether it's the Roth option or the tax-deductible option, contribute to the 401k. If your employer does not provide a 401k, you're limited to $5,500 for an IRA, another 1,000 if you're over 50 or above. But if your employer offers a 401k, you can contribute $17,500 into the thing.
Yes.
So you're at a disadvantage.
And actually more if you're over age 50.
So you start a small company, you can't contribute as much as someone who's working for. It discourages. This sort of thing discourages.
Take it one step further. If you work for certain municipalities or state agencies, you can contribute both to a 401k and a 457.
I like the way things are headed is making sure that employers have good plans for the people. I'd also like to see where if a person does not have those plans available to them through work, they can contribute to an IRA or something like that at the same sort of limits. That would seem retirement equality.
Yes.
In the age of equality right now. There's the grave inequality going on in this area. 888-2-HANSON to be part of the program. We've got a couple lines open. Love to take your call. 1-888-2-HANSON or 916-921-1530. We're talking with John. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. I have a question about asset allocation approaching retirement. I'm about late 50s, probably work for another 5 years. I've been fortunate, amassed a decent nest egg, investing almost exclusively, like 90 to 95% in equities over all the years. Realize I probably need to cut my exposure to equities and get in more fixed return type vehicles. But I really loathe to buy a lot of bonds right now with interest rates so low, plus expect to only take out maybe 2% per annum as a withdrawal rate from my nest egg after retirement. So I guess my question is, what would be maybe the maximum equity exposure that I maybe should feel comfortable with 4 or 5 years left to retire?
So it's a great question, and particularly if you read things or listen to things, everyone's saying you at this stage you should be taking on less risk. How much bonds do you think Bill Gates has in his portfolio?
Probably not one we call a balanced portfolio. Probably not 50%. I don't know if it's 10 or 20%.
Right. I mean, so he owns all's well some Berkshire Hathaway stock, right? That's where his wealth is.
Not Bill Gates.
Who did I say? Bill Gates?
Yeah.
Oh, Warren Buffett.
Okay.
Same thing for that matter, right? So, so if you're at a point where you have enough financial assets to maintain your standard of living and could afford to take on some big swings in your portfolio, one can make an argument that would be like this. Look, you only need 2% return, so why take any risk at all?
And which is you're going to get that out of dividend yield.
Or the other is you can take you've done such a great job, you can afford to take a lot of risk, so take a lot of risk. There's not really a right or wrong answer. The question is, how comfortable are you with this? And the nice thing about the last 15 years, you've had two nasty stock markets.
That's not a nice thing.
Well, I'm trying to find the best, you know.
How did you react in the last two downturns?
I rode it all the way down, didn't sell anything, and rode it all the way back
okay.
up.
Okay, so
I'm not sure that I necessarily have the stomach to do it.
Okay, perfect.
So I guess my thought process is, gee, I need to have enough in relatively stable value investments to survive a 5 or 6 or 7 year period of depressed equity prices.
Perfect.
That's a good way to look at it.
I like it.
So in other words, if you say I need 2% of my portfolio, you could say 2 times 10 years. You could say if I had 20% of my portfolio not tied to any equities, I could ride out a 10-year slump.
Okay. Well, right now I've been scaling back gradually over the last year or two. I'm probably 75% equities and 25% a mixture of bonds and cash.
I like it. I think that's a great way to go. And remember, your life expectancy on this portfolio is very, very long. It's not the date you retire. It's the day you die.
I'm hoping to draw off it for 35, 40 years
perfect.
And then leave a big chunk to the kids. So that's why I'm talking about the 2%.
I'm with you.
And if you look, John, the S&P 500, last I looked, it's yielding about 1.75%. So you could actually make an argument. Just say I'm going to just live off the dividends.
But 25% bonds.
No,
and I think
prudent.
It's perfect.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, appreciate the call.
Yeah,
and if you're worried about the bonds, right? As interest rates rise, bond values fall. Just shorten the maturities on the bonds.
Yeah, and give up some yield, but you'll be
you're not giving up a ton of yield.
I know it's worth it. Most people we would not tell in their late 50s. That 75% in stocks is a great allocation. So much is based upon what your history's been, what your comfort level is.
What your education level is.
And what your income needs are. And education...
Not formal education.
No, not formal education.
But education and investing. And
he had a
fairly good understanding.
Yeah, and I did say that it wasn't that many years ago we had the financial crisis. We all had an opportunity to learn how we reacted during that time and look back to some of those lessons and say and be honest with yourself. I mean, it's important to be honest with yourself. If you found that when the markets start going down, you went everything to cash and you waited until things started looking good and got back invested, well, don't just assume that next time you'll be smarter about it.
Yeah, assume that you actually will possibly react more negative the next time.
Yeah, because you've experienced that pain, you know what happened,
and you're older.
You're older, and most likely have your income needs are great. Yeah, I've seen some studies. I've seen Pat show that younger people, like the millennials, a lot of them just have no interest of investing in the stock market. Their savings in their 401k is not as aggressive as you'd think it would be. They're kind of just
well. That kind of makes sense, doesn't it? I mean,
It's different than how it was in the past over years.
Yes, but look at where their impressions were formed and what market cycles. It's the same way about home ownership. There just isn't that great desire to own a home anymore with the millennials.
That's right. Or me neither. I'm trying to get my wife to sell our house for about a year.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, I don't think. Let's just get a little condo somewhere. My youngest is about to leave the house. I don't want it too comfortable for them to come back, stay too
long. Yeah, you're small. Maybe move into a mobile home somewhere.
I didn't say that small. Mobile. Maybe just get a motor home.
You know what? So isn't that funny? You know you're getting old. Last night, I'm talking with my wife, and so we have two kids, and I have leaving the house, and we got two more. And I said, "What do you think in 5 years when the youngest?" She said, "I'd like to actually buy a motor home and travel the country." I'm like, "Wow, we're really getting old." Talking about motor
with you.
Yeah,
you know,
she's by herself.
I love my wife. I'm just trying to think. I don't know how long we could actually, a week. I think a week would be good.
We were getting his and her motorhomes. We can stay in the, same RV park.
Just kind of around the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, not far. Yeah, she can still walk.
I'll get a text. Would you like to join me for dinner?
How to RV and stay married.
Yeah, that's in my hers. New book.
Yeah, that's right. All right.
That way you have things to talk about at the end of the day. You've gone your own different places.
You see that squirrel that I almost hit? It came running out of nowhere. We think
Holy
we're funny anyway.
Smokes.
All right, let's talk with Bill. Bill, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, I was just wondering what your thought on gold is. I have some. I don't know whether to invest it or to leave it where it is, and just wanted your thoughts.
When did you get the gold?
About 3 years ago.
And what drove you to buy the gold 3 years ago?
Every radio host
inherited.
Oh,
you inherited it.
Yes.
And of this inheritance, did you inherit other assets and cash and stuff?
Or? Yes.
And what percentage of your portfolio or net worth does this gold make as a percentage? What?
Oh, wow. It's only probably 5%.
All right. Would you go out and buy gold today?
I don't know. Maybe this was bought in years ago at, like $60, $70 an ounce.
And what?
So I don't know.
So you have no. So this was
interesting.
So it's an interesting question. I don't think gold is a great investment over the long term because it actually doesn't produce. It's not a factor of production, and
no, it doesn't.
It doesn't do anything.
Doesn't pay
it just
an interest
sits
payment,
there.
Nothing.
And the price fluctuation is based a lot on economic cycles. But when you get down to it, at the very end of the day,
inflation.
Correct. But at the very end of the day, the price of gold is determined by how much it costs to get out of the ground. That's what the price of gold is. It's no different than grapes or apples or anything else. Is when the price goes up, people actually grow more apples and make more money, and then typically an oversupply in the market.
Almonds in California.
Almonds.
Water stock in almonds, apparently. I don't know.
I don't know if that's all true or not. But when gold prices go up, more people actually begin to extract gold from the ground, typically causes an oversupply of gold, and then the price drops. I don't think you should own it. And if you were going to own it, you typically wouldn't own it in raw form. You would own it through an ETF.
You know, I have investments in the market, and they have done pretty well, as you know. And I'm wondering whether to do that with that or leave it where it is.
Yeah, it was fine. As a general rule, most financial advisors will say if you're going to have gold, keep it at 5% of your portfolio or less. So you're sitting at 5% of your portfolio. It's not like you made a big bet on this. Odds are if you go and sell it tomorrow, it's going to go up in price because that's usually what happens. If you sell stock the next day, it goes up. It's just how things work. You buy it, it goes down. So it's not going to hurt you at all. If these are some dollars, if you think you want to convert this to cash to spend on something in the next 5 years, we'd highly encourage you to get rid of it now because the price can be volatile. If at 5% of your portfolio, something you inherited that you have no plan on spending it anytime soon, we see no problem of holding on to it right now. I mean, really. If you sell it, you think, where am I going to Where am I going to invest these dollars? And that creates a whole other set of challenges. I don't see anything wrong with 5% of your portfolio, just keeping it where it's probably in a safety deposit box. If it's not
going to... It's not going to necessarily...
Change anything. Correct. It's 5% of the portfolio.
Yeah.
And if there's some sort of financial Armageddon, you'll be standing in line hoping they open the doors to the banks, you can come in and get your gold.
Exactly. Okay.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Thanks, Bill. We're assuming that's where it is. And if you have gold or that sort of thing... Anything, make sure you save it. We're going to take a break in a moment, but we've got three lines open. Love to take your calls. Anything financial, whether it has to do with your retirement or your investment or college education or insurance. Maybe someone's trying to pitch some product to you and you like another opinion on it. I'd love to be able to take your call. Our number to be on the program here, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON or 916-921-1530. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad you are here with us on this Memorial Day weekend. Both myself and my partner here are financial advisors, of course. Talk about financial matters on the
work with people just like yourself.
Yeah. And we've got lines open. You want to be part of the program. We're going to talk here in a bit about some of the dangers we see with the amount of money going into these annuity products and what's going to happen when rates rise. But we still have a couple lines open and love to take your call. If you've got a question for us, we have lines open, 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON or 916-921-1530. Again, 916-921-1530. So annuity sales, fixed annuity sales, are almost double what they were 2 years ago. So and what happens? Someone goes to the bank. This is how it often happens.
It often happens at the bank.
CDs coming up from renewal. The CD rates are down so low. The Federal Reserve has pushed interest rates down so low that people are finally saying, I can't take it anymore. I need to be doing something more with my money besides earning 0.001 on it. And they're taking the teller, oh, isn't there something else we can do? And the teller says, well, if you want to talk to our financial advisor, Steve's here on Wednesdays. Why don't you come back on Wednesday and you can meet with Steve? Oh, okay.
Or so, I'll have Steve give you a call.
Or whatever, right? So you meet with this financial advisor, and oftentimes in the bank, but it could be, I think actually brokers are selling more products than anybody. So someone presents to you this fixed annuity, and the story is how great they are because your principal's protected, you have tax-deferred growth, and you have a decent interest rate. Well, what ends up happening when you invest in an annuity, whether it's a fixed annuity or an equity index annuity, when you give your chunk of money to the insurance company doesn't have any sort of magical tricks or anything. They have to go and invest in the same financial markets that we all have to invest in. They don't have any special access. Yes, they might do some direct mortgages here and there, but the fact is it's still competitive environments. They have to be just as competitive in their rates, if they're going to loan money to somebody or if they're going to go out and buy bonds, they have to go and invest these dollars and they want to try to match the maturity. So if someone invests in an annuity with a 10-year surrender charge, the insurance company is going to go out and invest in similar 10-year maturity.
And a surrender charge means that if you pull your money out in the first year, you're going to lose 6 or 7% or 10% of the principal. If you pull it out in the second, you'll lose a little less, third, all the way for 10 years. And what that does is it protects the insurance company from loss on the commissions they paid to the broker and in the portfolios and guarantees them a profit, quite frankly. That's what the surrender charge does.
Of course. To make sure that, but the challenge is this. So a lot of people in this environment saying, look, I don't want to invest in long-term bonds or lock my money up. I don't want to invest in a five-year CD because rates are down. If you think that your interest rate will go up with an annuity product, you are mistaken. And the reason it will not go up if interest rates rise is because the insurance company will issue certain blocks of annuity contracts. They say, might say, all right, we're going to raise $50 million or $100 million or whatever the number is. We're going to raise X dollars in product 5278. And once they've raised that money, product 5278 has its own portfolio. Then they come out with a new 5279.
Yes, a whole new block. And they sell that off and move forward. And they own both that in life portfolio.
Both in life insurance and in annuities. So we see all these dollars going into these annuities. If you think it's the wrong time to be buying a long-term CD or wrong time to be buying a long-term bond, it's probably the wrong time to be buying a long-term annuity.
And they do it at the bank. I was asked last month, would you like to visit with a financial advisor, Mr. McLean?
Did you say, yes, I would actually enjoy that?
I passed. I said, nah, it's all right. I would not enjoy it. And I said, no. But I thought it was interesting because she looked at my account balance, which I didn't consider extraordinarily high.
That's because you're like a financial fat cat guy.
It wasn't that high, but she said, you know, there's alternatives for this other than this this savings account.
And it wasn't a bank product they were trying to recommend.
No. They said, you can sit down with one of our financial advisors.
And they're going to put your $20,000 in a fixed annuity or something.
They were going to probably recommend something that I would not have purchased.
You think? So anyway, if you've been listening to the program for a while, we are not huge fans of annuities, particularly these fixed and equity index annuities. Are there times when they may or may not make sense? Perhaps they just tend to be. Every year or 2 years or something, I have about 30 hours of continuing education I have to do as a certified financial planner. And I do hold an insurance license with the state of California in addition to several securities licenses. And the insurance license mainly for years back, but I still just keep it in force because, I don't know, even though we don't sell security insurance products. But taking this, I'm going through this course. I had to take an online course on insurance products. And this course was literally telling me how to market and sell, how to sell an equity index annuity.
Really?
Tax deferred growth. How much better these are than CDs. And I'm reading this. I'm like, did some insurance marketing person create this continuing education?
Very well may have.
I thought it was a joke. I thought of all fights to fight, I'm not going to fight that one. So I took the thing in it. Anyway, let's go take some
calls.
How'd
you
do? I don't know. I passed the thing.
Was it hard? I'm joking.
No. No, it was not hard.
The ones I like where you go, when you answer the questions, then they say, slow down, you're moving, you're going too fast.
I know. Sometimes you have to go and then you go watch
the videos. They want you to actually read the whole case.
By the way, some continuing education seems like a joke. It's this online stuff. Other times you have to go to certain places. It's proctored. You're there with a bunch of pilots and other type of people that seriously. Yeah. 888-2-HANSON to be part of the program. That's 1-888-2-HANSON or 916-921-1530. We're talking with Mark. Mark, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning, Scott and Pat. I am 65 and I'll turn 66 in November. And my wife is 64. I did not want to take my Social Security until age 70 to maximize my benefit. And I guess the question I have is, if my wife wants to claim Social Security retirement now, and her Social Security is based solely on my earnings.
So she doesn't have any Social Security on her own?
Correct.
Okay.
So my question, I guess, is whether or not she is eligible to claim Social Security, whether she should do that now or whether she should wait until she's 66, which would be her full retirement age. And do I have to do something like file and suspend, which I don't quite know what that means?
Yeah, I believe because she doesn't have any of her own Social Security, for her to qualify under yours, you would need to file. What file and suspend means, and where it really works, if your wife had some time in the workforce, let's say she had a career at some point in time, she could claim under yours while she's under age 70 and allow her own to continue to grow, and then age 70 swap over to yours? Because you're deferring till age 70 so you can have the maximum amount. So what file suspend is, once you are your normal retirement age, which would be age 66, you claim your Social Security saying, I want to receive Social Security, and then you immediately say, actually, I want to suspend it until I'm age 70. When you do that, you continue to have the same benefits you'd have now as far as any additional Social Security taxes that you'd be paying would increase your benefit. Furthermore, you'd be having the benefit would increase each year, each month you delayed until age 70. And then your spouse could file, once she's full her normal retirement age, but on as a spousal benefit, even though you're not receiving yours.
That's correct. And actually, whether she takes it or not, you want to file and suspend. And the reason being is that if you file and suspend any time prior to the age of 70, of age 70, where you take the Social Security, you could actually get them to pay you back to the first dollar. And so let's say between now and the age 66 and 70, you developed a medical condition that shortens your life expectancy. You'll actually want to take the lower amount in a lump sum going back to age 66. So whether she takes it or not is irrelevant. You want to file and suspend. The question I would ask is, why would she take, why does she want to take it and you not? What are your objectives?
Solely to maximize the Social Security benefits.
And there's, by the way, there's some great programs. We actually have a software program, as I'm sure other advisors do, that can run through and give you a ton of different options and show you all the different ways and how it's going to benefit you. I would suggest going through that scenario before you make a decision. And again, we have that software. I think other financial advisors do. And that's what we'd recommend, doing a little more analysis. We're up against the clock. We're taking a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean have been airing Hanson McLean's Money Matters for nearly 20 years. The straightforward, common sense advice you hear each weekend is the same sort of advice you'll receive when you work with their advisory firm, Hanson McLean. Hanson McLean Advisors is a distinctive investment advisory firm in that it specializes with people preparing for and transitioning into retirement. The current economic environment has made it more difficult for many people to become retirement ready. Furthermore, with people living healthier, longer lives today, many folks view retirement much differently than their parents did. They want to stay active and engaged, and some don't want to ever fully retire. Hanson McLean understands that every individual is unique, and that is why they tailor their financial advice to the specific needs of each client they serve. Hanson McLean's credentialed advisors take the time to listen to their clients before they make any recommendations. And Hanson McLean's independent fiduciary model can give you confidence knowing your retirement dollars are invested properly for you. To get your retirement on track, contact them today by calling 1-888-2-HANSON or visiting them at moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
I got to tell you a funny story. Is this a funny story?
Well, let us be the judge.
So, I went for a run this morning with a buddy of mine. My friend was a, West Point grad, Army Ranger, and then did a stint in Iraq.
I saw him at the last week at the restaurant. He was eating pancakes.
He doesn't look like a pancake eater because he's all ripped.
I asked, and he goes, "Oh, I've got a triathlon tomorrow." I'm like, "Okay, that makes sense."
Yeah, eating pancakes. He doesn't look like a pancake
guys
eater.
Guys like me are supposed to eat pancakes. That guy's like you.
So anyway, he picked me up.
We had some jelly donuts, and
he guides a blind guy running. He guided him to the Boston Marathon a few weeks ago, and we're gonna go for a run. He says, "Yeah, I'm gonna be guiding my friend. So, do you mind running with us together?" I said, "Great." So he picked me up. We drove down to.
Are you running on a road trail? Is it single track? What are you running?
No, we're running on the bike trail. So okay. It's a bike trail. And okay. Then and the road.
And the guy
is he's got a big vest that says blind.
Okay.
And there's actually quite a few
okay.
You know, so the story's getting a little longer than I was planning on. But
well, I'm interested.
Yeah, so it is interesting. So he guided him in Boston during the marathon. There's a whole group of
blind runners.
Yeah, blind runners. So we're driving back home in my neighborhood, and he went through a stop sign. I guess he didn't stop the way he was quite supposed to.
My friend,
the blind guy.
Okay.
But he did tell me in the state of California, you can be legally blind and have a driver's license. That's a whole nother story. And they gave him a placard while they, a handicap placard. And he says, wait a minute, you mean to tell me that you think I'm so blind that you're going to give me a placard that you're afraid that I might trip over curbs? You want me to park really close, but you're still saying it's okay that I should drive when he was losing his sight. That's a whole other story, but a fascinating one nonetheless.
Okay, so your friend runs a stop sign.
And then there's a nice high patrolman there, pulls him over, and ends up writing him a ticket because he didn't have a license plate on his front, gave him a warning on the stop sign. But then he was a veteran as well, Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
They ended up in this nice long conversation, and we were kind of like big friends afterwards and all that. And I'm kind of running late. I'm like, I got to get home here. But how do you tell the high patrolman, look, I'm kind of in a hurry. That's why the stop sign was ran.
This is a... Really? This happened this morning?
This morning.
You can say to a highway patrolman, I'm kind of in a hurry. I've done it.
You wouldn't want to say that unless you already know that he's writing the ticket, right?
This guy was...
I'm kind of in a hurry here. The reason I was speeding is I'm trying to make it home.
I got pulled over, and I started talking with the guy, and anyway, he emailed me a couple weeks later.
Emailed you?
Yeah.
Did he give you a ticket?
No, he didn't give me a ticket.
Okay.
We got to, by the end of the visit, he was a fan of the radio show. And he recognized my name, and then he was asking me about his portfolio on the side of the road.
You're like, if you could guarantee me a couple free passes next time I'm driving home from Lake Tahoe on Highway 80.
I didn't.
You didn't tell me that story before. Anyway,
all right.
We can talk about ourselves all day long. We're going to take a couple of these questions that people have sent into us, but also there's still time for another call or two if you'd like. 888-2-HANSEN to be part of the Hanson McLean's Money Matters program. 1-888-2-HANSON or 916-921-1530. Again, 921-1530.
All right. So this is a question.
And by the way, if you can submit questions to us at moneymatters.com. Moneymatters.com, you can send us all kinds of questions, and we answer the ones that we think are appropriate. We try to get back. We answer a lot.
All right. So this is from Terry. She emailed us. If one invests $150,000 at 4% and withdraws $700 a month from the first month, $700 a month, how many years before the money is gone?
That's a simple calculation.
Yeah, it is.
That's it.
Go to our website, moneymatters.com.
And we have a calculator. The bigger issue here, and I think the reason you brought this up, Pat, we often see people at retirement time, they'll say, okay, my life expectancy is this. So therefore, my life expectancy is 18 years. Therefore, I need to have a portfolio designed to last 18 years. Okay? The thing about life expectancy, when you look at a life expectancy, if you look at your life expectancy and it says you have 18 more years just by a random life expectancy, what that means is for every 100 people alive today, 18 years from now, half will be dead, half will be still living. Well, if you're planning on your money to last you to the length of your life expectancy and you are the 50% that die prior to that, then your portfolio's worked out just fine, your financial plan's worked out fine. But if you were the half that ended up having a longer life expectancy, now you've got some serious problems because you're going to be out of money.
Yeah.
And by the way, there was just a change in reverse mortgage rules this last month. And reverse mortgages can work great for somebody that has run out of other options.
That's why you bring it up.
That's when I would bring it up to somebody. You're later in life and your portfolio's getting drawdown way too far. You're kind of running out of options. A reverse mortgage can make less.
You have some equity in your home. So what was the rule change?
Well, it used to be that you didn't have to qualify on any, there was no income verification or anything. You didn't have to bother qualifying as long as you had equity in the home because you weren't required to make a payment. But people were required and are required on reverse mortgages to pay property taxes, insurance, and basic upkeep. Well, what it turned out that a lot of people who had reverse mortgages were choosing not to pay the property taxes, the insurance, and the upkeep. And technically, a bank is supposed to foreclose on somebody, But if you're a large bank and you've got an 88-year-old widow in a reverse mortgage on her house, not paying her insurance, the last thing you want to do from a PR perspective,
or maybe just from a moral,
they're banks. All right, fair enough. Let's hope that there's some. Yeah, you don't want to.
They lean the house anyway, so if there's equity in the home.
You don't want to kick some lady out at ace. So,
or man, for that matter.
Yeah, but odds are it's a.
Most women
live longer than men, and they're widowed much more frequently than men are. So this new ruling requires an income verification to make sure that somebody has the ability and the wherewithal to pay the property taxes, insurance, and upkeep on a house. So keep that in mind.
It is a last resort, a reverse mortgage.
Yeah.
So another question from Robert emails us. I am a state employee getting ready to retire. I have my 401k 457 funds invested through CalPERS. Everything else being equal, should I leave the funds with CalPERS or should I roll these to a large mutual fund family? Very low cost funds where I have a Roth and regular IRA money and other investments. What advantage or disadvantage do you have with CalPERS?
I think it's like, well, CalPERS has fine investment options in their 401k. I remember years ago, Pat, it was a couple years ago, one of the chief architects behind their 401k called the radio program and had a discussion. And he was talking about, he was very proud of how low cost fees were in the, in, I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah,
call.
I did. And
I remember asking, I said, what percentage of the funds invested in CalPERS 401k are in a fixed income or money market option? And the answer, it was somewhere like 37%.
It was high.
It was very high. And I said, isn't that interesting? I said, these are people that have great pensions by most of the time. Phenomenal pensions. You retire from the state after many years, you're going to get a great pension. You're going to have a phenomenal pension, which is really a fixed income piece of your portfolio.
Which means that the rest of your portfolio could be a little bit more aggressive.
So I remember this discussion with this CalPERS gentleman saying, look, you guys are really proud of your low-cost funds, and I think that's great. That's important. But don't you also think that maybe you were a little high on the cash?
He agreed.
Of course he agreed. So, and it was. I remember that call because it was one of those times where I thought, well, that's great. They've done such a great job at low cost. Maybe they haven't done such a good job
at education. At
educating on what are appropriate investments for their participants.
They try. They try.
Of course they do.
CalPERS tries. So the answer to Robert's question, so he's got money in a 401k, 457. Should he leave it there in his CalPERS 401k, 457, or should he move it to a large mutual fund family where he has low-cost funds and he actually has invested money before? I think he should move the dollars into a brokerage account at a low-cost brokerage and buy mutual funds across
many families
because he sounds comfortable doing so. And it sounds like he actually has direction inside his 401k and his 457. The only difference between the two is it's not a cost difference. It's just a selection difference.
Well, somebody has the ability and wherewithal to manage their own portfolio. Clearly, why would you want to leave in a 401k where your options are limited?
That is correct.
You can move it to a number of different low-cost brokerage firms, build a nice portfolio from a variety of different mutual fund companies using ETFs, no-load funds, if you wanted to have some other individual
securities. So there's no reason to leave it there. Why would you move it to an investment advisory firm? Because you're looking for that extra layer of advice.
Yeah, then you might choose to pay
a fee to an advisor.
There's a couple times, though, when you might choose to leave it there. One is if you have left employment and you're between the ages of 55 through 59 and a half. Because retirement dollars, IRA dollars, are locked up until 59 and a half. But if you leave your employer, but in the year you're turning 55 or older, you can take money from that employer's plan without having to be age 59 and a half. So you're 57, you're retiring. You might want to leave either some or all of your 401k where it is, primarily because it gives you access to that. Now, that is great financial.
There's no question. What are you shaking that thing around for? You sound like Rush Limbaugh.
I'm not trying to be Rush Limbaugh. Because it's got valuable information that I need. Basically, what time I'm, you know.
Yeah, we're off the air. Right. And it tells us to tell people to go to moneymatters.com. On moneymatters.com, there's articles regarding financial topics such as 401ks and 457s, much like the one we just answered, as well as many calculators that you can calculate on.
Yeah, this you can sign up for our newsletter on there. You can get podcasts of this program, and I write articles periodically for, say, CNBC. I'm actually starting a thing with Kiplinger's.
I saw that.
Every other week, beginning next month, I think. Something like that. They asked me if I would write, and I said, yes, I'd love it. Sounds fantastic.
To write about financial topics. Interesting.
Huh? Doesn't get any better than that.
Wow.
Man, my wife's excited, too. This is going to be great. Anyway, we hope everyone enjoys the Memorial Day weekend. We are here every Saturday. You can tune into the station or go to moneymatters.com, sign up for our podcast. You've been listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean have been airing Hanson McLean's Money Matters for nearly 20 years. The straightforward, common sense advice you hear each weekend is the same sort of advice you'll receive when you work with their advisory firm, Hanson McLean. Hanson McLean Advisors is a distinctive investment advisory firm in that it specializes with people preparing for and transitioning into retirement. The current economic environment has made it more difficult for many people to become retirement ready. Furthermore, with people living healthier, longer lives today, many folks view retirement much differently than their parents did. They want to stay active and engaged, and some don't want to ever fully retire. Hanson McLean understands that every individual is unique, and that is why they tailor their financial advice to the specific needs of each client they serve. Hanson McLean's credentialed advisors take the time to listen to their clients before they make any recommendations. And Hanson McLean's independent fiduciary model can give you confidence knowing your retirement dollars are invested properly for you. To get your retirement on track, contact them today by calling 1-888-2-HANSON or visiting them at moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.